12. This is the Subcommittee on General Government. Today is Monday, March the 28th, and we have before us the Construction Contractors Board, Adrian Sexton from LFO, I mean Legislative Fiscal Office, and Anne Marie, are you ready to go? Great. Good morning. Would you walk us through the memo that is at everyone's place and give us a little, yes, please. Give us a little preview of.
Madam Chair, I did not give all of the members of the subcommittee the memo that I shared with you over the weekend, basically laying out what should be the structure for beginning the official budget hearing process for the Construction Contractors Board. What I communicated with the subcommittee chair over the weekend is that the agencies all received a recommendation on ways and means presentation guidelines, and so each agency should be following that protocol to include a series of points, and I'll briefly describe those. For today, we're scheduled for a public hearing only, and there has been an indication of interest in some public testimony. I don't see him in the room at the moment, so I think that at the conclusion of the discussion of the budget would be an appropriate location for the public testimony. The start to finish for today is I'll walk you through the memo that is at your place about titled Construction Contractors Board Phase 2 Materials. The budget and management analyst will provide you with a high-level context for how and why the governor determined his budget for the agency and how that budget fits in the governor's larger budget picture. And he will cover the major issues facing the agency and how those issues are addressed in the governor's budget. The agency then will briefly review its mission and other information that was discussed in the first phase, which was when you looked at their priority lists and their performance measures, and then they'll describe major budget drivers, environmental factors, major changes to the agency in the last 10 years, including program changes and any budget cuts, specific actions the agency has taken and is taking to contain costs and improve program delivery, discuss the agency's approach to the use of professional services and purchasing contracts. They'll then detail major budgetary issues and review with you the budget detail, including descriptions of the essential and policy option packages. They'll review other fund balances and the rationale for the minimum ending balance and discuss their latest quarterly long-term vacancy report data. They'll discuss with you a summary of proposed legislation that affects the agency operations and the status of the legislation and what its effect might be on the budget. And then they're also prepared to provide you with follow-up information from Phase 1. They have a series of responses to the questions that were posed, and you have those at your place, and they will walk you through those. Then tomorrow you're scheduled again on the budget bill for additional public hearing time as necessary, and we'll talk about whether there are areas that you could go into work session on. It is posted for a possible work session, so if you had some recommendations about performance measures, you could place those before the subcommittee. And then the fee bill for the agency is also scheduled for hearing and possible work session tomorrow, and the agency tomorrow will provide you with information about the fee.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that I'm going to be going back to Adrian periodically as we move through this. Again, this is the first time that this particular prioritization and discussion has occurred. The structure for the conduct of the Ways and Means Subcommittees is a little different than it has been, so we may need additional guidance as we move through this. each of you have at your place a memo, do they not, that starts agency mission, primary programs, and customers that I hope will help guide our discussion. And Mr. Corey, I saw come in. You weren't in the room. Is he still here? Elusive. Okay. Well, we'll come back and give him an opportunity to testify. I think what might be useful, Adrian, is if we had the priority list and if you want to just recap that as a starting place for us to begin the conversation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will do that. That is the last item in the packet that I put at your place this morning, and this provides you with a compilation of the priorities that you worked through at the first meeting on the 7th of March. And it was the consensus of the subcommittee to rank the first four items at high, and those are the first item, contractor licensing and customer service. The second item has a two-part component. It has to do with education. Part of it is for consumers, and the other are for contractors. The third one, also rated high, is the dispute resolution program, which has to do with allegations of improper work. Enforcement, which is contractor discipline, also rated high. And at a medium level, the Construction Contractor Board administration. And I also did note that members of the subcommittee had some comments to make and suggestions about how they would rank the priorities differently. Senator Morissette indicated that he would have moved enforcement to a second priority with administration at three, and Representative Krupp would move dispute resolution to two with enforcement at a priority three level.
Against that backdrop, now, Adrian, unless you have an objection, I'm going to ask Satish to give us the budget management perspective on this budget. We have yet to hear from him. Is this an appropriate time to do that?
That would be fine if you don't want me to just quickly go through my memo.
Why don't you quickly go through your memo?
All right. Thank you.
Sorry, Satish. We'll be back.
yes. The LFO is just giving you a very, very high-level piece. Basically, the agency's mission, as you had heard, and their materials all show, that they protect the public's interest relating to improvements to real property, regulating construction contractors, and promoting a competitive business environment through education, contractor licensing, dispute resolution, and law enforcement. And their primary programs and customers are the contractors, and they regulate the profession of construction contracting through licensure. They educate consumers and contractors of their respective rights and responsibilities. They provide dispute resolution services between parties and investigate allegations of unlawful contracting activity. So in total, they provide services to homeowners, contractors, subcontractors, construction suppliers, bonding and insurance companies, and state and local building officials. Major policy and budget issues identified by the Legislative Fiscal Office. The agency did implement a flat license fee structure and fee increase by administrative rules starting July 1, 2004, and House Bill 5013 was introduced for the legislative ratification of the annual fee level of $295.
And just to remind the committee, this budget is built around the anticipation of this fee increase.
Correct.
Okay. Quick question on the fee increase.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. Is the checkbook balance going to grow as a result of the fee increase?
I'm going to ask Mr. Smith to respond.
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board Administrator. The question is, will the fee increase result in a higher ending balance? It was designed to be neutral. We are receiving more new contractors today than we projected 2 years ago. We're seeing a higher rate of renewal than we anticipated or experienced 2 years prior. And so at this point, if this fee remains as it is, the ending balance would be higher. And according to the way the statute is written, we'll be looking at that fee again based upon what you authorize to determine if that fee should be lowered or raise to whatever max that you permit.
Follow Representative Smith.
I will be okay with a higher ending balance so long as the ratio of the ending balance to the number of clients served remains somewhat equal to the ending balance of the new number of clients served.
And Madam Chair, if I might, Craig, correct me, is it a biennial renewal or annual?
It is a, Madam Chair and staff, it is a biennial renewal.
Thank you.
I'm confused. I'm sorry. A biennial fee? How come it says annual?
Madam Chair, that would be my error.
Ah. Okay.
And for the record, Senator Johnson, if I could, it's a two-year renewal fee, not necessarily a biennial fee, as the way we think of a biennium, but the fee is for a two-year period of time. There's also currently an option that a contractor can exercise to pay a four-year fee.
And get a discount? Is there a opportunity for some savings there?
Madam Chair, there is no discount. It's double the fee. The advantage would be less paperwork, and if the fees go up, they benefit by that.
I guess that begs the obvious question. Why don't you just have a four-year renewal cycle?
Madam Chair, it's not a bad question. I hadn't thought about a four-year renewal cycle. Most new contractors are looking to get in to business and aren't thinking 4 years ahead of time. But we can certainly give that some thought.
Well, if the goal is to reduce paperwork and less wear and tear on your customers, that might be something to think about. Senator Morset.
Do you stagger the fee from not everybody applies at the same time, do they?
Senator Morissette, Chair Johnson, Senator Morissette, that's correct. It's not all at the same time. They have a birth date whenever they register. It could be any time during a month, and then 24 months after that is when they start.
Okay, Adrian, go ahead. I think you're on budget notes.
Thank you, yes. Well, there's one other point having to do with the budget issues also. They also made changes in the dispute resolution process as a result of 2003 legislation, which includes a 30-day notice to the contractor of an intent to file a claim and also a claim filing fee, and that those two elements have reduced the number of claims filed. Budget notes, it was not so much a budget note as a suggestion, recommendation to the agency based on some late-breaking information to the subcommittee last session. They suggested that the agency work with the construction industry and folks from insurance division and anybody else appropriate on an issue of exterior insulation and finish systems. You have a copy of the report that the Construction Contractors Board has issued as a result. The subcommittee had also said if there was appropriate legislation to bring forward to make that recommendation, no recommendation was made for legislation.
Quick question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. On the claim filing fee, how do you deal with that situation if a little old widowed spouse has been wronged by a contractor and can't afford the fee?
Chair Johnson and Representative Smith, there is a provision in the law that would allow for waiving of the fee. In most cases, we don't find that homeowners can't afford the fee, but it's there in case it does. The fee is not charged up front. The fee is only charged after the agency takes a look at the claim, make sure that the agency has jurisdiction. And the fee is recoverable if damages are awarded by ordering the contractor to pay the $50 fee back to the consumer.
Follow up. Thank you.
Follow up.
Bless you.
Sorry.
is that fact stated in such a way that the individual with limited resources would not be dissuaded from looking for restitution? Or are they going to say, I can't even get past phase one?
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, we believe that it's clear that the fee is nominal. It shouldn't be a hurdle to filing a legitimate claim. We did not anticipate the drop-off in claims. There were a number of claims because the process did not have a cost prior to the fee authorization from last session that we believe was very frivolous and not on point, and we're not getting those these days. But we don't believe that legitimate claims are being dissuaded by the fee.
Well, thank you for letting me flush through this. Two quick questions. One, what is the current fee?
Representative Johnson, Representative Smith, the current fee is
$50. $50, okay. As a result of the reduction in claims being filed, I assume somebody's workload has been reduced. And how have we adjusted for that reduced workload?
Senator Johnson and Representative Smith, we have moved some position out of the claims section into the licensing section to take a workload, to move workload around. We've found that, however, we're able to catch up on backlog. This time last year, I want to say we had about a 2,000 case backlog approximately. Now we're running quicker. We have less than 1,000 backlog, and so we're able to do the job a little bit better.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Then on to the revenue sources. This is an all other funded agency. And then the governor's recommended budget includes the reclassification of 5 claims examiners positions and 2 positions in the information systems section. Those were the result of review and analysis by Human Services Resource Division at Department of Administrative Services. It also adds 1 administrative specialist, 1 position with 1 FTE to the education section for contractor education coordination, and would reclassify 1 position currently in the education section to be devoted to consumer education, and then it further maintains current level of dispute resolution and enforcement resources.
Is that?
That's me.
Good. Well, that's a perfect segue then into the comments from the budget management folks. Specifically, I think we would be interested in knowing why the governor determined his budget for the agency and how the agency budget fits into the governor's plan, as well as certainly your comments on issues facing the agency and how those issues are addressed in the governor's budget.
May I ask you?
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. I guess, anticipating your comments. How closely do you work with the governor in the governor's budget and drawing up the governor's budget? Does he rely on you for information?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris said, yes, the agency starts. The information starts from the agency.
Yeah.
First, there's the
yeah.
agency request budget. We get the information from the agency.
May I stop you, please, and ask you to identify yourself?
Sorry, Madam Chair. This is Satish Chapadia with the Department of Administrative Services,
okay.
and I'm the budget analyst for
okay.
the Construction Contractors Board. So the way the process starts is the agency sends in mm-hmm. the agency budget request, and the Department of Administrative Services, we analyze the information, talk to the agency, and then make a recommendation to the government.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Satish, we welcome your comments.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyaya with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm here to provide you with an overview on the Governor's recommended budget for the Construction Contractors Board for the 2005-2007 buying year. You all should have a copy of my presentation document in front of you all.
Madam Chair, I'll go get those made.
We're getting them.
It should be over there. Yeah, envelope.
Okay. There we go.
Sorry about that.
Thank you. We do now.
Sure. So if you will turn to page 2, the 2 pie charts there, what you see is the governor's recommended budget for the entire consumer and business services program area. Now, this program area has 17 agencies, including the Construction Contractors Board. And I think you'll be listening to the budgets of most of these agencies in this subcommittee and in the Transportation and Economic Development subcommittee. As you can see from the charts, the governor's recommended budget for the Consumer and Business Services Program Area consists of $840.1 million total funds. And this program area has $11.6 million of general fund. There's only one state agency in this program area that has the general fund, and that is the Bureau of Labor and Industries. All other agencies under this program area are mainly funded with fees and assessments. Also, one thing to notice is the Construction Contractors Board's budget is fairly small compared to other agencies. It's just 1.4% of the total program area's budget. Moving along to page 3. The Construction Contractors Board has basically four functions: contractor licensing, adjudicating claims, investigating violations, and providing education to consumers and contractors. So these activities support two of the governor's principles. One principle is the economic development principle, and the other one is the education and workforce development principle. So those were the guiding principles for us when we looked at this. Moving along to page 4, as you can see from the pie chart, the $12.1 million of this budget is entirely other funds, and almost all the revenue sources are registration and renewal fees. Moving along to page 5. Now, this shows the various budget categories. Personal services is 58% of the budget, services and supplies is 41%, and capital outlay is 1%. Do subcommittee members have any questions on the elements of the various expenditure categories?
Representative Smith.
Well, I want to get down into more detail. Are we going to get down into more detail?
Yes, we can. Moving along to page 6, the table there, what it shows is that the $12.1 million other funds budget, which has 61.38 full-time equivalent positions, it is about 6% more than the 2003-2005 legislatively approved budget. And the main reasons for the increase, one is personal services. If you compare it with 2003-2005, in fact, there's a decrease in services and supplies and capital outlay, but there is an increase in personal services, and the main factors being one is salaries and wages. What this budget has is it includes a 1%, one-step increase for salaries for all of the state employees who haven't reached the top step, and that is per the pre-2003-2005 budget development policy. You'll see that in all state agencies. There's a one-step increase there. Another thing we have is the PERS, public employment retirement costs. And lastly, the other element is the flexible benefits that pays for medical benefits, mainly for medical benefits for state employees. So that's the main reason for the increase. For more details on this, Representative Smith, what you may want to do is look on page 40 in the governor's recommended budget binder. I believe for the legislative fiscal officer's instructions, the agency is supposed to go through that.
Yes.
Later on during this phase two.
Okay, real quick.
Process. Representative Smith.
Thank you. On page 5 under services and supplies, are any of those dollars spent on contractors within the Construction Contractors Board?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, there is a line item which is for professional services and which is for contractors.
How many contractors do we have here?
I'd have to ask Mr. Smith.
This is where we get to get into budget, right?
Chair Johnson, Representative Smith, I've got a handout that I can go through. If you'd like to, I can find it now and then talk about it, or I could wait until Satish is finished. What would be your preference?
My question for whoever can answer it is I just want to know how many contractors we have, how long their contracts are for, and in what amount. So whether that's now or...
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith, I'm not sure I understand the question. How many contractors we have, that piece I understand.
Right, under services and supplies, I'm trying to determine if the board is using contractors in lieu of FTE. And so I'm trying to find out, of the $4.9 million, how much of that money is spent on contractors who perhaps are on a retainer-type basis,
Madam Chair, if I may, if the agency could get back to you with that information later on, if today, if not tomorrow.
I just know, for the committee's sake, in other budgets I've been reviewing very closely, quite often FTE are paid in the form of contracts rather than as state employees. And so I'm just trying to determine if that's the situation.
Okay. Senator Johnson, I can address that now if it's your pleasure.
Please, go ahead.
We do have some labor that is contracted out, particularly is with the enforcement division. We've got about 16 different contracts for services that involve going to job sites, checking for non-licensed contractors, process of what we call regional investigators, which is looking for non-licensed contractors. It's approximately $500,000 per biennium. It's not included in the FTE portion of this discussion. We also have a certain amount of funds that are for what we call special investigations. That's criminal type investigations. I do have a breakout that shows all those dollar amounts, and I can share that with you at a later time.
I turn to the chair. How much?
We're scheduled for 2 days. I am willing to let this go a little bit longer so you can get a satisfactory answer to your question.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. What's the reason of having $500,000 spent on investigators rather than hiring them as FTE?
Senator Johnson, Representative Smith, you know, I think this it's a bit of an experiment to see if these services can be done effectively through contracting out. It's been in the process used throughout the last approximately 15 years or so. There are some headaches with it. I'll be quite honest with you. There's some headaches with it. It may be more cost efficient to do it this way. Currently, we believe so. However, I've come to learn, particularly recently, that working with this program, regional investigators, is a challenge to make sure that those folks know everything they need to know when they're out in the field, in many cases representing the state of Oregon as a contractor doing investigation work. It can be a problem, and I'd love to talk to you about that if you'd like to.
Follow up. But when was the last time those contracts were let for a public bid?
Senator Johnson, Representative Smith.
It would have been.
With your permission, what I've done, ma'am, is I've asked our program managers to join us. And if I could, if you'd indulge me, I'd like to also introduce the chair of the Construction Contractors Board, Mr. Fairchild. He's here in case you'd like to talk to him. And with your permission, I'll ask the program manager for the enforcement section to come up and answer that program.
That's fine. Why don't you join Mr. Smith here at the table, introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Johnson, member of the committee, my name is Rich Blank. I'm the enforcement manager for the Construction Contractors Board.
You're welcome to put your book on the end of that table if that works for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Senator Johnson, Representative Smith, in answer to your question, the last time these contracts were let for public bid was July 1 of 2003.
And I assume there's a public process. I'm a contractor, how would I know that I have an opportunity to bid, whether I'm qualified or not? How do I know?
We put, Senator Johnson, Representative Smith, we use the standard state system. There's a vendor system set up. I'm not intimately involved with that process, so I'd have to get back with you to answer that question in detail. The types of contracts that are let here involve private investigation. That's a fairly tight community. Those folks have their own license. It's fairly well known in that community when these licenses are or when these contracts are available, and they are competed for. And from time to time, folks who have had the license or had the contract lose out to a better bidder.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is that all we have for Mr. Blank?
Yeah, that answered my question. Thank you.
Representative Crump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify,
that the 500,000 over the biennium for non-FTE, these types of contracts, that is included in personal services or services and supplies. Which category would that be under? S&S?
Senator Johnson, Representative Roth, that'd be S&S, yes.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Satish, if you want to conclude your...
No. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, this is again Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. I believe we are on page 7, which talks about the major policy issues. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the governor recognized the contribution of this agency with regards to the citizens of the state because it primarily supports this economic development and education and workload, education and workforce development principles. As a result, it maintains all existing services. Secondly, it adds resources, including one staff position for consumer and contractor outreach. You will be seeing two policy packages with the agencies going to talk about more in detail later. One is package 103, which reclassifies an existing position and also provides additional funds for outreach for consumer education. You will also be seeing in package 104 for contractor education the establishment of an administrative specialist one position. So those are the enhancements in this budget. Another thing I'm sure you're interested in is the reclassification of 7 other positions. 5 of the positions are claims examiner positions. What happens is the Department of Administrative Services comes out with new classifications, and they came out with a new series called the Compliance Specialist Series and determined that the claims examiners had to be moved into these new series. As a result, you will be seeing 5 reclassifications based on that.
And Satish, I know that it was in the detail of the presentation documents, but I don't recall. Can you tell me what the difference is between those two positions, both monetarily and...
Yes, Madam Chair. The positions are reclassified from salary range 22 to salary range 25, and the impact on the budget for the 2005-2007 budget is $24,830. These are for the 5 positions, and that's for 2005-2007 biennium. Besides that, there is another reclassification you will be seeing, and these are 2 information systems positions. And there's one position which is being reclassified from a set information specialist 3 to an information specialist 5, and another position from an information specialist 2 to an information specialist 4. Basically, one position is a reclassification from a salary range 24 to a salary range 23. The other one is from a salary range 21 to salary range 25. And fiscal impact of this reclassification is about
That's a pretty severe reclass. 100,000 over biennium, Madam Chair.
So, let me look at the amount on this.
For 2 information services people.
It's on page 88, and actually, the reclassification just cost $15,077, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And this package also has some other enhancements. That was the reason for the confusion. One is it provides additional funds to replace some outdated information systems equipment, because that's around $60,000. So what you will be seeing in package 102 is the total package is for $135,457. So what this does is it reclassifies the 2 positions, and it provides additional funds to replace some outdated equipment, and also there's a training component for information systems.
I don't know exactly who to direct this question to. I think probably start with Satish. Why combine in a single enhancement package both capital outlay and reclasses?
Madam Chair, the reason in this was because this was information systems related. It was related to a particular program. But you can easily, you know, separate this. If we look at, on page 88 in the governor's recommended budget, you can easily separate the elements of this.
Representative Crump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a great question. I know it's one that we wrestled with last session in terms of capital outlays and the thought of extending the payment for those capital outlays over the service life of the equipment as opposed to just in a biennium. And I want to revisit that with you here. Part of this package is to replace aging servers and equipment. How old is that equipment that you've been operating with today?
Senator Johnson and Representative Krupp, it varies. I'll have to get back to you on that to give you a complete breakdown. We do have an IT plan, an information technology plan that is in accordance with Department of Administrative Standards as terms of replacement. Usually is a replacement around 3 years, but I can provide that breakdown to you tomorrow.
Follow up, Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are we talking, when's the last time you spent money to upgrade this equipment? I guess I should ask you that next.
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, this package was reviewed, as with a lot of IT information technology packages that you all will see. This was reviewed by the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division, and they determined the life cycle, and they looked at the equipment that was going to be replaced. There was, in the 2003-2005 budget, I think there was $72,000 that was also to replace some other information technology packages. That amount we are reducing, and that's in package 022. So you'll see that when we are talking about essential packages. As with a number of state agencies, the computer equipment in a number of the state agencies are in really bad shape, and they need to be from time to time.
Madam Chair, thank you, and I do appreciate your indulgence. Getting not to talk disparagingly of IRMD, but when they cannot tell us how much money they're spending statewide for information technology, which you all heard Don Fleming sit in front of this committee in answer to a question I wrote. I am concerned at the information that IRMD gives other state agencies in terms of analysis of their equipment and capability is perhaps not all that it should be. And because of that, and because we are trying to find ways to stretch dollars in this particular legislative session, I think it would be perhaps a reasonable idea to consider that we look at the length of term that we're going to pay for capital equipment purchases of this nature and look at perhaps stretching that out as a means of helping reach some of our budget goals. And with that, I'll end my questioning. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. That will be a subject that I think we'll have the opportunity to revisit again in the Department of Administrative Services, more detailed look at their budget. I know that's an interest of yours, and we flagged it. Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, I guess the relevant question to follow up on Representative Crop is what would happen if we didn't approve?
Senator Johnson and Senator Morris, if you didn't approve it, we'd work with the equipment that we have. And if we had failures, we would patch them together as best we could. Over the weekend, I was working on some matters and communicating with staff, and I expressed to her the fact that we had a primary domain controller go down, which permitted or prevented me from communicating with her as rapidly as I would have liked to. These are the things that we try to avoid by making sure that we have the equipment that operates well and doesn't break down, and we have a life cycle plan to do so.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I would guess, because statutorily you have the ability to shift 10% of your budget around, if this was a priority, you could shift part of your budget to make that work.
that accurate?
Senator, Chair Johnson and Representative Smith, we can shift dollars, and if we need to shift dollars into technology, we'll do so. The fact of the matter is technology is driving most of what we do in terms of efficiency, and if we don't have adequate technology, we can't make it up through good labor.
I'm going to insert myself into this for just a second. To what degree are the technology upgrades for the convenience of your speed in talking to your staff versus how customers are served? Give us an example of how this technology would make it easier for a contractor to communicate with your board.
Senator Johnson, when I mentioned staff, I was referring to your staff over the weekend I was talking with. But yes, our customers are both consumers as well as construction contractors. What they're interested in knowing is whether or not a contractor is properly licensed. Those records are maintained on our computer and are available over the internet. If servers go down, primary domain controllers go down, this prevents those folks from accessing that information. Of course, licensing. Most of our licensing is done through imaging technology today, so that we reduce the amount of paper and we're able to reduce storage. So if the question is, how does it impact our customers, the answer is significantly.
And just a follow-up that you could come back with tomorrow, what's the track record for failures? I mean, are you prospectively looking towards possible anticipated failures, or do you have a record of failures with this equipment that has inconvenienced your contractor universe of clients?
Senator Johnson will research that issue and provide you with that information tomorrow.
Senator, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson.
I'm determined to give you.
You are.
I need to digress back to the fee increase that was mentioned a while ago. I guess I need to be walked through this. I'm looking at the 0305 legislatively adopted budget, and that was $11,403,000. I'm looking at with the policy packages added on in the base budget adjustments, a new budget of $11,999,000, or an increase of $596,000. I've also been told that the ending balance is going to increase. What I'm curious about is your current ending balance is $2.9 million, or 25% of the budget. How come you couldn't just absorb this into the budget and reduce down your ending balance?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith,
and not raise fees.
A few, a little bit more information on the fee increase. Okay, the fee increase was also the approval was also given by the 2003 legislature. They had a policy. The Construction Contractors Board had a policy package to change the fee structure. They had a number of fees, and they got permission from the 2003 legislature to come up with this new fee. And the 2003 legislature was informed that the fee increase was going to take place starting October of 2003. But because they had a better ending balance, the board deferred the fee increase until July of 2004. So the fee increase was done after approval from the legislature. And what the board does is it constantly reviews the ending balances. And in this case, yes, because they've had a higher ending balance, and Craig, please jump in if I'm wrong, that's how they are trying to absorb the cost.
Just a quick follow-up. I think the Construction Contractors Board does a very good job, but short of the chair twisting my arm, I'd be very reticent to vote yes on a fee increase, knowing that you've got $3 million as an ending balance sitting there, and 10% of the budget can be shifted around.
We have a question from Representative Ivaki and a question from Representative Krupp, and I'm going to invite the chair of the board to come up. I think you may help instruct this discussion as we move along. Representative Ivaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have a statutorily required amount of an ending balance? 2 months, 6 months reserves that are required?
Madam Chair, Representative Abakian, I cannot recall there being anything in the statutes, but for state agents, for other funded state agency, 6 months to a year's ending balance we consider as kind of prudent, especially for an agency like the Construction Contractors Board, where the revenues go up and down. We just consider that a 6 month ending balance is pretty prudent. It's a good business practice.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. First of all, what are your actual expenditures that you are anticipating for the 03-05 biennium as opposed to legislatively adopted or legislatively approved? And second question is, do we have a vacant position report at this time?
Madam Chair, Representative Croft, what you will see, what you see in the governor's recommended budget in the 2003 is that you will see a package 190. What the Department of Administrative Services did with the agency is we sat with them. When we developed the budget, we had 12 months of actual expenditures available. So we went line item by line item, all the various expenditures, and determined that a reduction could be made. So we worked together with the agency, and you see a package 190 where there's a reduction to the 2003-2005 budget of around $297,000. So that what I'm trying to mention today is that the governor's budget already looks at actual expenditures. With regards to your question about the actual expenditures for 2003-2005, at this point we don't have that information because the biennium is not over yet, but your staff, I think, they have access to 18 months expenditure reports.
Thank you. And then the question about the vacancies.
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, I believe sometime during this presentation there is a time when the agency talks about its vacant positions. But in the budget, in the governor's budget, there's a line item where you'll see a reduction based on assumed vacancies. There's a reduction of $70,000 reduction under package 010. And you will be seeing this in all state agencies' budget. One thing we consider is we just make a projection of what an agency would save from existing vacancies.
And I am going to ask Mr. Smith right now, how many vacancies do you have in the agency?
Senator Johnson, I'm going to ask my budget officer and personnel officer to come up. She has that information hopefully in her head, and she should be able to give you an accurate answer to that question.
Fine. Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Chair Johnson, members of the committee. I'm Linda Teat, Manager of Administrative Services and Budget Officer and Human Resources Officer. We do have one long-term position vacancy opening that is the accountant position in the Administrative Services section. It has been vacant this entire biennium. We have several positions that have been open just several months, and we anticipate filling those positions, but only one long-term vacancy.
Yes, Madam Chair. If I may ask, how many of the short-term positions are currently vacant?
Chair Johnson, Representative Krupp, I believe we have two clerical positions, one clerical position and one compliance position that has been vacant for approximately 2 months.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Hey,
thank you very much. I'm going to ask the board chair to come back again. I think one thing that might be instructive in this discussion, just to set a context for the committee deliberations, is as the, at least in my view, you're the link between the clients you serve and the agency as the board chair. And I'm interested in having your comments about the public process that was used to solicit the input from the people regulated by the board and the fee payers with respect to the increase in fees, the board's decision to delay the implementation of the increase, and just in general, your comments about the agency's relationship with its universe of customers.
Thank you, Jim Fairchild, Chair of the Construction Contractors Board. I've been on the board now for about 8 years. And during this time here, when we went through the recession, so it dropped down. You have on the board a group of small business and basic small to large business people, basically, that took a look. And one of the first things they saw happening was the fact, whoa, we're heading for the red. And small businesses don't like to get in the red at all. So what we did, we started very early putting Mr. Smith on the line here, saying, where are we? What is our bottom line? Cut back. So what we did is we quickly, when we saw the recession started, we cut back quite drastically before, and then also they came in with the governor saying, please do so. At the end of this, when things appeared that we were going to go and end up without a cushion at that time here, and all of us in business like to have that percentage of cushion for the unexpected. we went and said, at this point here, we need to go and do something to ensure that we have a, quote, business cushion. At that point there, we went and talked with all of the various agencies as well as the
industry groups.
The industry groups, thank you. I have the terminology here. And started to say, where are we? What is acceptable to you? This sort of thing. Result is, that's where we came up with a particular fee. As we started to do this, our people, they, recession that, it was knocking off the poorly, the poor business person, what have you, we turned and found out, just as we made the change, or wanted to make the change, and got the all the okay, gone through all the hoops, things were starting to come back up a little bit. That's at this point right here, we said, well, wait a minute, let's not jump into it too fast. Let's wait and see what happened here. So we backed off and basically delayed it for the 6 months. Again, talking with the industry groups, with the people around us. We saw that we were going to be right on a very fine line. And we would rather then, so when that's when we went ahead and instituted the increase and did not get any really anti as far as the people were going. If you look in the part of the packet that went out to you, there is a deal that shows here's what other industries, other states and that are on the same thing are charging and vice versa, you know, against ours. And we're very competitive and at the bottom level right there. Result is we went in and have gone with where we were at the particular point. If I might digress, one quick one. Senator Morris, you asked about, no, excuse me, Senator Johnson, you asked about the four-year plan. For some businesses, 4 years is a lot more money than 2 years. And so that's the reason why we stay with the 2 years as opposed to the 4 years, given the option.
That's a good explanation. Thank you, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. How many facilities do you folks have?
What?
How many facilities?
Senator Johnson, Representative Smith, we have just one office. It's located in Salem. We have some of the, obviously, the people that we have on contract are not located in the office. They're in throughout the state. They operate out of their homes or out of their own businesses.
We pay for that separately from their contract, or is that all part of their contract?
Senator Johnson and Representative Smith, it's all part of their contract.
On page 5 of 7 under budget support, detail revenues and expenditures, it shows that facility rental and taxes for the biennium is $674,000. I'm not an analyst, but I divide that by 24 months and it comes out to $28,000 a month. Can you explain that?
Senator Johnson, Representative Smith, that is the rent for the, I believe that's the rent, is it?
Yes.
For the facility that we have here in Salem. It's in the Oregon Veterans Building. It houses the 60 some odd employees, not the contractors, just the employees.
What's the square footage on that building?
Senator Johnson, Representative Smith, I don't know the square footage of the building. We only occupy a portion of that building. If you're interested in the cost per square foot, I think we can give $1.50 a foot.
Can you just follow up, please? Can you see where that would be a flag for a member on this committee looking at $28,357 a month for 65 employees?
Chair Johnson and Representative Smith, yes, I can.
Mr. Kirchhoff, do you have a comment?
Yes, Chair Johnson, Representative Smith. We looked into this, and we're interested in trying to go create our own facility because we thought down the line it would be more economical to do such. And we're unable to...
Excuse me.
By we, I'm talking about the board. And at the time, we were unable to, through the procedures we had to follow, to go and pursue that very far.
And Senator Johnson, if I could...
No, I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair for just a second. Where were the roadblocks, Mr. Fairchild?
Again, it was... I'm going to have to do some of the deferring to the specific item. But when we started to say, all right, we could raise the money here and we could pay for it on this plate, we had the possibility of a contractor a person who would be willing to build the building, we work together, and then they would go and give it through rent and that basically a lease option, a lease buy process as we went through. And when we got into the financial end, we were stymied in two or three areas, and now it's been about 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I think it was, 2 or 3 years ago. And I can't give you specific item because I don't remember. It was through the, if we had to become a semi-independent agency, I think, for one thing, and some other things like this. And I think the other one that, and this is personal, this is just me, I felt that it was also one where they didn't want to lose money on from the state agency part.
That the Veterans Department wouldn't want to let go of a...
Well, I don't know if it was the Veterans Department. It was, I think, you know, through the... That was a feeling I had. But that's just me as a feeling. I'll be right.
That's fine. You're entitled to an opinion. Mr. Smith, do you have any institutional history that could instruct us?
Yes, Senator Johnson. What I can tell you is that we do work with the Department of Administrative Services to try to find the best home at the cheapest cost for the agency. They've been instrumental in helping us work with the currently the Department of Veteran Affairs, who own the building and charge the rate that they choose to charge. I can tell you that they would like to charge more. They advised us that they were going to charge more. And if it wasn't for the good and faithful work from the Department of Administrative Services, we'd either be looking at moving or paying substantially more for the space than we currently are. We negotiated the fee. I think they wanted $1.65, we used some negotiation techniques to keep it down to $1.50 throughout the biennium.
I'm going to ask the staff on behalf of Dallas to flag this. I think this is a subject that we're going to want to discuss with DAS, excuse me, the Department of Administrative Services, when their budget comes before us, so that we can have some kind of cogent rationale for why a 65-person shop is paying $28,000 a month in rent.
Madam Chair, it runs even deeper than that. As a side note to this conversation, there is a state agency renting a floor from a bank building downtown here that has seven employees in it paying $10,000 per month. That agency has been downsized. They used to have about 30 employees in that. They have decided, since I think a couple of us started looking into that all of a sudden they didn't need that space anymore, and I guess that lease is going away very shortly. I think as a matter of fiduciary responsibility, we as managers of the people's money should look at leases more closely, I think, in the future. I think it bears some scrutiny overall in terms of policy.
Well, you're going to have the opportunity to have that discussion with Ms. Warner, and I, as the chair, invite you to have it. I think this is an important area. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I think we need a more detail under the entire services and supplies arena. When I look at office expenses, and I don't know what's entailed in that, but again, it's $461,000. And again, I do simple math, divide that by 24 months, and that's $19,225 divided by 65 employees, and I come out to $295 per employee per month under office expenses. And I know there's other explanation there, but I think we as a committee ought to be able to get some more breakout on this.
Representative Avakian.
You know, I also think it's a good discussion to have, but I think it's a discussion wider than the one board. And, you know, as I break down those numbers, you know, you're looking at a little less, I think, than $500 per month per employee, and you can't go to any metropolitan area and find office space for much less than that or $1.50 a square foot. And the more we shift these agencies to go fend for themselves and find leases and take care of themselves, they throw them into a competitive market, I'm not surprised that we end up with what seems to be a private market competitive type of rate. So I think it's a great discussion, but I'm not so sure it isn't a much broader discussion than just the one board, and how that becomes coordinated amongst the other committees, I don't know.
Well, I think it's something that we're going to have the opportunity to discuss with DAS, Department of Administrative Services, when they're before us, to just understand the whole rent policy and how aggressively they're monitoring leases. Mr. Fairchild, before you go, and we have some other people that want to testify, and I'm going to finish with you and then invite other testimony before the panel continues their deliberations, would you share with the committee how engaged your board is with respect to the policy option packages, the legislative agenda of the agency, and at what intervals you review with Mr. Smith the financials of the board?
Basically, we review our financials. I'll go back to just ask Chairman Johnson. We review the financial ends monthly, except for I think we 2 months we don't meet. But every time we meet, we have a full, basically, bottom line, as well as a pretty fair breakdown of what's happening. So we do have our fingers on what is going on. Again, it's not a micromanage, but we want to know where the general categories are and what's been, where are we now. In fact, as we had for a while, where they were projecting that this is our projected, this is where our actual are, and we said, wait a minute, you're showing us one figure out here and one figure in here. We said, we don't like that. Bring the actual projected and actual right in line, and so we've done that. So we do have, I think, a pretty good accurate item on this. As far as the other, I have to commend Mr. Smith and his staff on the fact that they do give us a very complete updating of all of the basically problems, as well as the good things that are happening in this, as well as what is here are our I don't know what you call it, statutory problems we're seeing and need to be adjusted. So in general, I would say, yes, the board is well involved in what's going on, and like I know we spent much, much time in the interest item trying to solve this and going around board members going and meeting with other people, this kind of thing.
Thank you. Any reps or Senator Morse?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To follow up on that, with the Chair's question, if you identify something that needs a remedy or a correction, does the board have the authority to pass a resolution and cause the administration to implement that, or are you strictly advisory?
Senator Morris, Chairman Johnson, we don't even have to do a resolution. What we do is say, hey, well, let's get going on this, and I'll be very honest with you. We found that Mr. Smith and the staff have really gone on it right now, and it's one where every time, and again, I speak for the 8 years I've been out of there, every time we've said, hey, what's going on here, it's been, the information has been gotten to us, our movement has been made, and in fact is, in like in the insurance, we went probably past what should have been our boundaries, because I know we contacted the governor, we contacted all of the various agencies. I mean, we, as well as our partners in the area, that I mean, we went all over the place trying to find problems and even asked for meetings to be brought together, which Mr. Smith did at the time when we brought things back. So yes, very responsive, and I think does a good job of looking at it. Didn't solve the problem, unfortunately.
Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Fairchild, and thank you for your willingness to serve on one of the advisory boards that helps the state agencies make sound decisions. I know it takes away from your professional time, and we're appreciative for your service. Representative Smith.
Well, I want to add to that. I want you to know this guy does a pretty darn good job for you folks. I ask tough questions, but he does a good job for you. So.
I would agree.
Thank you very much. I believe we have some folks that have signed up to testify, and before the committee continues their deliberations, I'm going to ask Ms. Sexton for a comment, and then we'll move into testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. I did want to just put on the record with regard to the fee increase activity that took place during this biennium. The agency did contact me while they were considering the issue around ending balance and implementation of the fee change, and so we did discuss what the preferences of the legislature would be in terms of their approach to it, whether the decision was to implement immediately delay, change the amount, because the direction from the 2003 legislature was that the fee increase was appropriate. It should not exceed $295 for the two-year license, and they should not exceed a six-month ending balance accumulation. So it was using judgment as to what the projections versus actuals were, and they went through that discussion with us.
Okay, thank you very much. If you wouldn't mind getting the testimony sheet, I saw Mr. Kafouri jump up, so I know he's first up. I saw him sign it first. Mr. Smith, you're welcome to stay at the table or not. Satish, I might ask you to make way for the witnesses, and we'll ask you to come back up. All right. Thank you very much. First up, we have Mr. Stephen Kafouri.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Kafouri. I'm here this morning representing the Oregon Remodelers Association. Madam Chair, we helped found what used to be the Builders Board a number of years ago, our organization, because we were concerned about a couple of things. First, we're obviously concerned about consumer protection. This is a field in which people are putting their often their largest single investment, their own home, at risk when they're asking someone to come in and start hammering and nailing and sawing. And so we're concerned that whoever doing that has some good background and some good financial resources to come back in case things go wrong. We're also concerned about a level playing field. It's a very competitive market, and we want to be sure that the people that we're competing for in a field that's often operated on low fees, low bid business, that we're, those folks are experiencing the same costs that we are, that they're paying their workers' compensation, that they're paying their insurance, that they're paying their taxes. And so an enforcement agency that levels that playing field makes our business run more efficiently. Thirdly, we're looking for inefficient and we're looking for cheap, inexpensive, and quick dispute resolutions. We need, when we have a dispute with a customer or when we have a dispute with a supplier or with a subcontractor, we want a very quick and easy dispute resolution process, and the CCB provides that for us. I personally have represented the Oregon Remodelers Association for nearly 20 years, and in that time I've worked very, very closely with Mr. Smith and with his predecessor, and find that this organization works extraordinarily closely with the industry, not only my association but the other associations that are involved, licensed by this board. They are in continual communication with us. They invite us into their meetings where we discuss policy. They invite us to meetings when they discuss the budget. They have newsletters that goes out to the industry. They work with our organization, and we work with our membership very closely to pass on the information that we get from the CCB. So when a new project comes up that they're involved in, if they're looking at fee changes, our members are aware of what's happening, and I hear about that. And I must say that our organization, the Oregon Remodeler Association, is made up of a bunch of very, very small businesses, mostly 2-, 3-, 4-person shops. And in that kind of business, you cannot afford to be anyway found foolish. We are not concerned about a $5 up or down amount in our license fee. What we are concerned about is, are we operating an agency? Are we supporting an agency that if we have a claim is going to come in and not have a 2,000 list waiting list so that we have to wait a long time to have that dispute resolution? We operate on very small profit margins, and if we have a $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 even amount that's out because it's being disputed, that hurts our bottom line, and it hurts our profit margin. So we need to have quick and accurate dispute resolution so that we can get on with our business. And we don't have a lot of time to take away from what we do. Most of our folks are actually pounding nails. They're not sitting in an office somewhere. And so time taken away is time taken away from work that we get paid for. And so whatever the CCB can do to speed the process and whatever you can do to help them be efficient benefits us. I have never heard in the time that I've been representing these people anyone complain about our fees. I have heard complaints about processes, and when we've had process complaints, we've found the agency to be very receptive. They're doing something right now in terms of their IT, which we are really looking forward to. We're just going out for some beta testing in a very short period of time, the next couple of weeks, and that is we have a problem sometimes with insurance. I'm sure you've heard a lot that insurance rates have gone up and insurance has been dropped. And when we hire subcontractors or ourselves being used as subcontractors and working with a primary contractor, it's really essential for us to know that that person's licensed. And a large part of where the license is up to date and accurate is whether the insurance is in effect. And the CCB is now putting a new service online where we can check and be notified, not just have to look at the web every day and see is this a subcontractor actually having insurance up to speed and are they licensed, therefore. But if the person that we ask to have checked use the same subs over and over again, that person falls out of compliance, we will actually get an email back saying that person is out of compliance and you need to check on them. Those are the kind of things that we think the innovation and the services that are given to this to us and our organization and our members is vital to keep our organization going and our business going, and we support the budget they have. I know that there's a situation where there may be a few more folks than it looks like is necessary, but if these investigators can do better work at the doorstep in terms of not having to rush on to the next client and can be there and mediate that problem between the homeowner and the contract, which is often just based on misunderstanding, not based on bad work. We can get that mediated right away, get us back to work again, get our fees coming in from our clients, we're better off. So we support the efficiency that they're doing, and we'll be very worried about cutting back on the numbers.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Stephen, how would you rate information technology and priorities? And have you had any experience, or your members have any specific experience in not being able to get the adequate information that they want through the Internet?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I have not heard of any bad experiences. I do know that this is really vital to us, though. Our clients are continually checking on the net. We go and say, here's our company and here's our license number and we'd like to bid in this project. The first thing they do is go at the web and check with the CCB to see, you know, is our license up to date. And if there's any breakdown there, they're off to see somebody else.
But you haven't.
But we have not had any.
Follow-up, Senator Morissette.
Oh, okay.
All right, any other questions for Mr. Gafoori? Thank you very much for joining us. I would ask now Scott Berry to come forward. Good morning, Mr. Berry.
Good morning. Hi, for the record, Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders Association. And I think Mr. Gafoori already covered the importance that we as contractors have or feel about the dispute resolution process. And I think in just adding to that, the consumer education piece is imperative as well, and making sure that the folks out there hiring contractors know how to hire a contractor. And that, I think, in the end, can solve a lot of the problems that that exist between the contractors and the consumer. In terms of the comments that the board chair made earlier, I think those were very accurate. The drop in terms of the fee increase, the drop in the number of registered contractors who became then licensed contractors after the test was put in place was both part of the testing that was there, and then in addition to the test that was put in place at about that same time, the recession. And I think those two things led to a drop in the number of contractors and the support for a fee increase because of the dispute resolution necessities that we all need with the contractors board. So I think those two issues led to the support from the industry of the fee increase. And then, you know, we were happy to work with the contractors board in supporting the delay of that as more fees and more money came in as they moved to a two-year cycle of collecting fees. That allowed for additional funds as well. And so as those things occurred, they delayed the fee increase, and we were supportive of that. We have, on the building itself, though, I would say that I think the line of questioning was right on task. I get concerned sometimes being with a contractor group as we look at building codes division and the fees there that are collected, and that agency is entirely fee-driven, and the Construction Contractors Board is also fee-driven. And the one thing all of the contractors, union, non-union, commercial, residential, remodeling, all agree on is sometimes we feel picked on that those fee-driven agencies are going to get charged higher fees or be seen as a place where other agencies might go to raise some funds. We've seen it from the state police through, you know, and I don't know with the veterans whether they're overcharging the contractors board or not for that space. It would be a concern that we would have, and we'd certainly appreciate looking into that. If the contractors board could at some point purchase a building through our fees and then reduce their costs in the future, even if that's 20 years down the road, what a benefit, you know, that would be for all of us, I think. Finally, I would mention that we have one idea out there, and I'll get the bill number for you folks tomorrow because I don't have it with me. But we introduced a bill this session along with Representative Alan Brown that would take the civil penalty money that currently goes to the general fund, and instead of sending it to the general fund, we're not supportive of leaving it with the contractors board because we don't want an incentive to increase your budget by going out and finding contractors. But we would like to maybe send it back to consumers who were injured by contractors who went into bankruptcy. And that bill is out there right now. So it wouldn't pay them back all the money they lost, certainly, but it would give them a certain percentage on the dollar money back after the bond was gone. Those folks are, again, out of business. These are not folks who are just not paying or doing their job. They're folks who've already lost their bond and therefore their license as well. And then this would give them some additional money back at the end of that biennium based on how many, you know, the amount of civil penalties that were in there. We'd love for the interest to go into that fund as well, but I know that may be a little more difficult pot of money to get. But the interest currently also goes to the general fund from what I understand. So.
Thank you. Any questions from Mr. Baird? Thank you very much. I'd ask Mr. Miller, please, to come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Greg Miller. I'm here with the Associated General Contractors. Would just like to echo the same sentiments that Mr. Cafori and Mr. Berry mentioned in terms of services and efficiencies from the CCB. The Associated General Contractors have been happy with this level of service and efficiency thus far and would support the bill that's in front of you today. And in addition to those comments, just make you aware that the CCB has been in contact with us several times over the last year to talk about different issues. They've been very open to us, asking for comments, asking how the AGC feels about different programs and different ideas that the CCB has. So be open to answer any questions.
Representative Smith,
would it be okay if I took the shoe out of my mouth on not supporting? I didn't realize the industry was so supportive of your efforts, and so I once again stand open as an open slate.
Well, this is quite the testimonial when you have the remodelers, the home builders, and Associated General Contractors coming forward in support of the agency and in support of the agency's budget request. I think that's a tribute to the agency. Mr. Smith, do you have something you want to say?
Madam Chair, I would only comment that we do try to reach out to consumer groups as well. We try to have an arm's length relationship with the people that pay the fees. After all, they do pay the fees. We're the regulator, they're the regulatees, and I think it's a partnership that helps facilitate the economy of Oregon as well as protecting consumers. I wish I had consumer groups here as well. They're a little bit tougher to corral, frankly, and bring them in here, but we do have we have some information for you later that talks about how we reach out to consumers.
Thank you very much. Anything else, Mr. Miller?
Nope. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That concludes the folks that had signed in. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Crump.
If we could return to some dollar figure analysis, I have some continuing questions, if that would be appropriate.
I think that's exactly where we're headed.
Okay, very good.
And why don't you begin?
Thank you. Driving in here, heard a great report, very positive report, that construction industry last month in Oregon added 700 jobs. I think that's outstanding. How does that relate to, and I'm going to ask this of Andrea, how does that relate to the LFO analysis here where it's indicating a growth in construction? And I'm looking at the very last sentence here on the page. And this is the LFO analyst summary.
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, at the time I wrote the analysis, that was December of 2004, and I used information from the then most recent Office of Economic Analysis from Budget and Management or Department of Administrative Services of what they had concluded, and that the 2004, what the statement says is that the 2004 growth in construction sector generally was to be positive at 4.8%, but 2005 would be a slowing of that growth, and it down to 1.9%. I don't know the placement of those 700 construction jobs, whether those are generally associated with the highway construction, highway and bridge construction package, or whether it's really new jobs replacing old jobs, or whether there is an attributable 700-person growth in the construction industry, and further, what that 700 represents in percentage terms.
Well, Madam Chair, where I'm going with the question is to ascertain the paragraph previous to this, as part of the narrative, talks about revenues from licensing and renewal fees are about 12% lower than assumed in the 2003-2005 budget. I'm assuming that that's because of the recession that we had been through in 2003-2005. So since they were lower than anticipated, if we are having expanded growth and the agency receives licensing and renewal fees because of that, is there an expectation of additional dollars over what we have forecast to come to the agency during the 2005-2007 time period?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, one of the sequences that the Department of Administrative Services goes through during a biennium, as well as the agencies, and is continually analyzing what the actuals are versus the projected. We don't know what might happen economically in the 18th month of the 2005-2007 biennium. So these new jobs may not actually be individuals who are required to be licensed with the construction contractors board. So it's a matter of continuous monitoring of that. I can't tell you right now whether those 700 jobs are going to mean that they get $700 times $295 into the revenue stream.
Right. And Madam Chair, if I may continue, I wanted to go back to my conversation with Satish. In talking about actual figures, we don't know what they are yet. You mentioned package 090, which is in our book. That is a reduction of $297,381. There's another package, 022, which is also a reduction of $72,000. And the narrative here is that's a reduction related to the cost of computer equipment. Okay. So, I I'm trying to understand this correctly, and perhaps Andrea can also help me here. The legislatively adopted and approved budgets are 11,403. Okay, so you're saying then that we're going to subtract the 297 in policy package 090 and the $72,000 in 022 from that $11,403,000 figure?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, what you're looking at is page 40 on the governor's budget binder. Yes, that's correct. The $11.4 million is the starting point. I mean, this is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. What this page shows you is how the governor's budget was technically developed. Okay. The starting point was the 2003-2005 legislatively approved budget that had the $11.4 million. Then what you will be seeing is there are some other adjustments. Okay, there are some additions, position actions, and all that.
Right.
Then you will see there are a number of reductions. One is the vacancy savings reduction of $70,000 you see in package 010. then there's the $72,000 reduction. That $72,000 was provided by the 2003 legislature as one-time cost for the agency to buy some computer equipment. So since it was one time, there's no reason for them to have it again in 2005-2007, so there's a reduction. And the package 090 that I'm talking to you about was DAS and the Department of Administrative Services and the agency. We sat together during the governor's recommended budget development cycle, and we went through each line item. Okay, like, this is your budget, but do you really need it? You know, so we did that exercise, and together we agreed that the budget could be reduced by the $290,000.
Okay, and so, Madam Chair, if I may, that is not a reduction from the 03-05 budget. It is a reduction that's included in the 05-07 budgetary period, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Grob, that's correct.
Okay, I had misunderstood thinking previously then in our conversation. So then it goes back to the question that I'm trying to get at. What is the expectation of actual agency expenditures in 03-05 as opposed to what is legislatively adopted and legislatively approved? I'd like to know where we're at on that. Are they going to spend all $11,403,000, or will there be a variation there, first of all? And secondly, Representative Smith came up with the additional increase in 05-07 over 03-05 is $596,000. I'm coming up with adding up all of the policy packages that I see listed here, with puts and takes, or what, bots and what do we call that?
Not bots.
Bots and not bots. I'm only looking at a $251,000 increase in policy packages if you just add them up. So I'm confused.
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, I would have to sit down and do some comparisons to see where your question lies and what the answer is. As for the current actuals for 03-05, I did run a report on Saturday, and that includes, let's see, this being March, that includes information entered as of February 15th into the budget system. The biennium to date total for expenditures, all expenditures, came out at $8.6 million. And a straight line projection would be $10.3 million. There's an adjustment and it of plus $465,000 for an adjusted projection for the biennium at $10.8 million.
That includes the increase.
Yes. Well, these are the expenditures. The revenues do include the fee increase that was put in place July 1 of 04. So, and then the revenue showing the legislatively adopted working budget amount for revenues total. And there's a little subtlety to this because some of the revenues that they receive are civil penalties, and they share that with the general fund. So they keep some of that revenue, and then they ship some of it out. So that revenue falls into one of the revenue categories. So anyway, the total revenue, again, for the biennium is showing at, under the legislatively adopted budget, of $13.3 million. The projection for the biennium with adjustments is $11.8
million. Okay, Madam Chair, I thought you had just said that the projection was $10.8 million.
The expenditures at 10.8, revenues of 11.8.
Okay. I had written down that you had just said that the revenues for 03-05 were $13.3 million.
That was, I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, that's the amount in the legislatively adopted budget.
Of 13.3.
13.3.
But you're saying the actual expected is 11.8.
Correct.
And that gets back to your 12% lower in your narrative on your narrative page, your second to last paragraph from the bottom.
Yes.
Revenues are 12%.
Yes.
Okay, so that's that disparity then. Okay, so Madam Chair, if I'm understanding this correctly, the legislatively adopted and approved budget is $11.4 million, roughly. But we're expecting that they're only going to spend $10.8 million, correct?
Based on the actuals.
Based on the actuals. And so they're expecting total revenue for the biennium of 11.8, so we're basically $1 million surplus in 03-05 revenues as opposed to expenses. Is that correct?
That would be correct.
Okay, so then that adds, is that $1 million added into the $2.9 million ending balance, or is that added on top of the 2.9?
No, that would become part of
that becomes part of the
of three. The ending balance.
Of the ending balance.
Excess,
okay.
If you will, excess revenues over expenditures.
So Madam Chair, the question I have then is we have a legislative adopted budget of 11.4. We're only going to spend 10.8. Why did we approve so much in spending? Why are they not spending the amount that was approved? I'm not complaining, okay? Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to understand the process here of what happened in this agency.
Mr. Smith, you have a comment?
I don't, Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, I don't have a full explanation. I could bring a budget officer up to explain where we had some savings. We do try to be as frugal as we can. We're not an agency that's going to spend to its limit. We're going to spend only when we have to. We do have some possible upcoming expenses having to do with some legal matters that might affect the actuals here in the next few months. That's the best explanation I can give you without...
Let's ask your budget officer to come forward with a comment. I'd also like you to comment on how much you're spending on with the Attorney General's office, but please come forward.
Chair Johnson, Representative Krupp.
Would you state your name for the record?
My name is Linda Teeth, Manager of Administrative Services. My analysis would say that most of the money that... the reduction of expenditures is based on vacancies that have been held throughout the biennium, not necessarily long-term vacancies, but vacancies that have been open for months at a time and then filled. So that accumulation, plus the fact that we are very frugal and that we also have had to live within the administrative restrictions that the Department of Administrative Services set out last biennium. So purchases are made under strict regulation. So, but most of those savings have been due to salary savings.
Senator Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I commend any agency being frugal. Believe me, I wish we could obtain those kinds of frugalities in other agencies. It would be outstanding. So what then I'm understanding, Madam Chair and fellow members of the committee, and someone please correct me if my understanding is incorrect, is that this agency is on track to spend $10.8 million for 03-05, but they're asking us to approve in the governor's budget of 05-07 $12,074,000. That's about almost a $1.3 million increase, which is substantially more than the increase of, I think, 6% or whatever it is that the increase is slated to be. So when you're looking at actual expenditures in 03-05, looking at what is
they're asking for. I guess I need some justification in my mind as to why they need the legislature to approve an expenditure level that's that much higher, given that it doesn't look like their needs, at least historically, have not been there. Now, if there's something coming up around the horizon, Madam Chair, that would justify that, I'm all ears.
I would invite a response from Mr. Smith.
I think the best response I can give you is, Chair Johnson and Representative Trump, is that we did have some unexpected departures during the course of this last biennium. I would not expect those kind of changes in staff during the future biennium. I would hope we wouldn't. Frankly, when you lose trained staff like that, we've lost some talented folk to PERS retirements as well as a changing agency. And when you lose that kind of institutional knowledge, it sets you back. And so I'm hopeful that our budget will allow us to keep folks on. PERS won't be such that it'll encourage people to take an early retirement. And we won't have those kind of vacancies in the future. And if we don't have the spending authority, we'll be very, very tight.
Senator Morissette.
Well, maybe you're frugal because you're tired of being beaten around the head and shoulders on frugality. So if you had a scale and you had frugality on one side and efficiency on the other, which way would it be going? You have 1,000 cases on... What was your...
Chair Johnson and Senator Morissette, we like to think that the scale's going up on both sides. We like to think we're frugal as well.
No, it's got to be in the middle, one way or the other. Balance is fine. That's what you have to do, is maintain the balance. And so I don't want to hear just frugality. I want to hear efficiency as well.
Chair Johnson and Senator Morissette, I don't have examples of efficiencies to share with you other than the things that we do using technology. And we're looking for a variety of ways to try to service our customers through the Internet as opposed to through the mail and through the telephone and so forth. I'd like to think that we're taking...
Yeah.
Clarification.
Backlog of cases, 1,000?
Okay.
That is
Chair Johnson and Senator Morissette, I didn't mean to represent that we have a backlog of 1,000, but that's the amount of cases that are currently in the pipeline. They're open and not closed, and that has changed dramatically over the last 2 years. For many, many years, we had well over 2,000. I think I recall a time when it was substantially over 2,000. We've been able to bring that down to only 1,000 or even less than that, I think, at this present time, which is a benefit to both the contractors we serve as well as the people filing the claims.
One more
thought.
What kind of polling and survey work have you done with your constituents, with your customers?
Thank you, Senator Johnson and Senator Morissette. We do a lot of polling. There isn't a section in the agency that doesn't have some type of consumer or customer satisfaction poll. Matter of fact, we poll in the dispute resolution section both parties to the dispute. We poll our licensees after they get done through the renewal process, and we ask people who deal with our services whether or not we have an effective education program and whether we have an effective deterrent to illegal construction activity, which amounts to the enforcement program. And we publish those results.
And you're satisfied.
No. Senator Johnson, Senator Morissette, we're never satisfied. We're looking for ways to improve.
Okay. Well, it's, man.
Please.
It sounds like maybe then Senator or Representative Trump is right. We need to be more frugal because apparently you've reached the satisfactory level in efficiency and now it's time to cut. Very good.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I want to point out an efficiency that we talked about earlier this morning before came here. Mr. Smith and I got together, and the Construction Contractors Board has agreed to try and find ways to partner with our small business partners to figure out how to reach out to them and to help them get through the initial stages of starting up a contractor's business. And so there's one efficiency right there. So offer that as an example.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Mr. Fairchild to come back up to the table. You looked as though you had something to contribute. Again, would you state your name for the record, please?
Jim Fairchild, Chairman, Contractors Construction Board. Please, do one thing. You got a very conservative group on the board. We asked and pulled back early in the recession and said, hey, we don't want to be one of these that's going to be in the red at the end. And so we pulled things back and said, be careful. Things that were, I think, valuable, but maybe not essential. Example would be perhaps some of the advertising and the information type things that we could put out to people and said, okay, that's not going to, in the majority of cases, be a critical item. So we pulled things back. So we pulled them back, and then on top of that, we were pulled back, and then we got a directive from up above saying, take 10% more back and 10% more back. Result is, we, and I say we, referring to myself and the board, have pulled things back perhaps more than should have been early, but in the long run, we're very proud of it, that we felt we had done well for the agency and the government, you know, the city of Oregon.
Representative Vakian, did you have a question?
I did. Thank
Please.
You. I want to go back to the ending balance again and just make sure I understand that. You, and if I may, Madam Chair, I've got maybe three.
Please continue.
For the 0103, I'm on page 60 of the governor's recommended budget, you ended up with about $2.7 million, the actual ending balance.
Yes, me.
Now, I'm curious first if you had to dip into that amount at all during that biennium.
Chair Johnson and Representative Vakian, the answer is yes. We did have to. We did a couple of things. We had a problem in 0103. The problem was that revenues, much like the general fund, revenues weren't there. Let alone spending authority was there, but revenues weren't. So we cut back substantially on our spending because we didn't have the money in the bank. And I think we came close to $1 million? Just above $1 million in spending because it's not as if we had an opportunity to borrow. If we did. But so we had that problem there. And so we dipped into both reserve as well as we cut spending.
Okay. Were you going to add something?
No.
Okay. And then the 0305 estimate is 3.088, and is that still what you anticipate?
Chair Johnson and Representative Vakian, and we believe we are in a little bit better position than that currently.
Okay. How much better? So I'm asking, do you have a number?
3.5.
Okay, that's helpful. And have you had to dip into that amount during this current biennium, or have you just been able to allow it to grow?
Chair Johnson, Representative Vakian, no, we haven't had to dip into that. We've had sufficient revenues to take care of our spending.
Okay. And then the what we expect to be about a $1 million surplus under the current budget that we're analyzing, is that $1 million that would be added to that 3.5 if it were to be realized, or is that included within this 3.5?
It's included, sir.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Quick question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. What's your average monthly expense?
Representative Johnson, Representative Smith, about $500,000.
$500,000.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We have 15 minutes left today, and I just want to sort of set the scene for where I'd like the committee to go. We're scheduled again for this panel. We're going to need to get into linking your performance measures to the request for the additional position and the claims workload issues. And so I want to make sure that the committee comes with their performance measures tomorrow and we can begin there. I'm going to ask the agency before we conclude today to just review their mission, anything else that you want to add to it with respect to phase one. I thank you for the questions and answers that were here. I don't think any of us have had a chance to digest those, given that they were just here this morning. I think that we are going to want to talk about cost containment to a degree that you can help the committee understand your average monthly expenses, particularly related to anything around the services and supplies. And then I think we will continue to review the budget detail and talk about the policy option packages in greater detail. Adrian, does that sound like something we can accomplish tomorrow? Ideally, we could if we don't have more testimony or we work expeditiously. We could actually do a possible work session. But we absolutely need to link these additional option packages in your performance measures, and I would like again to revisit the committee's recommendations on the performance measures. I know that there's the bankruptcy one continues to bother me, and I want to talk about that in greater detail. So I think just, Mr. Smith, in the remaining few minutes that we have here, if you want to add anything in response to anything that you've heard discussion-wise, or begin at least to talk about the policy option packages with respect to any of the information that the panel's developed here, we'll conclude with that and then begin in earnest on the discussion of performance measures in the morning.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I think the best way for me to spend the time would be to remind you that the regulatory scheme here with construction contractors in Oregon is an accountability model, a financial accountability model. In other states, what's done is to test for competency. You don't do that in this state currently for construction contractors. You try to make it fairly easy to get involved in the business. Let people prove themselves. You allow the market to set prices as opposed to make it difficult to enter. To offset that, what Oregon has done is provide a variety of mechanisms, including insurance and bond, the dispute resolution program, and this licensing component that monitors construction contractors. So if they do cause a problem in the marketplace, you're able to take them out of the marketplace and hold them accountable for those bad acts. You also have a statutory scheme which is fairly unique that allows the agency to whatever kind of business entity is licensed to hold the human beings that own that business accountable for the acts of that business. So that in so doing, if the corporation causes a problem in Oregon and leaves a lot of bad debt, we're able to hold those human beings out of business until those bad debts are paid. The mission of the Construction Contractors Board, you've heard several times, it has to do with consumer protection and level playing field. I won't go through that much more. Our drivers in the business of regulation, of course, have to do with salaries, retirement, insurance. Workload in licensing is slightly up. Enforcement a little bit down. The dispute resolution, the raw numbers are roughly in half, but the workload remains fairly high, and that is because we've been able to take and meet acts, frankly, to the what we believe are frivolous or non-disputes that are not within our jurisdiction, and they're out. On top of that, the notice requirement doesn't get talked about very much. This is the requirement of a part of people wanting to file an action against a contractor to notify them. Hey, wait a minute. I've got a problem with you. And what this has done, of course, is taken a lot of contractors who know that they don't want to have experience with the Construction Contractors Board dispute resolution process. It motivates them to go out and fix the problem before they get a claim. That makes all kinds of sense. It's good for the economy. It's good for the state. It solves problems before they happen.
May I ask a precursor?
Representative Bucket.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we get into the performance measures tomorrow, one of the things that appears to be a disconnect that I'd like you to address is it sounds like you were operating with fewer staff during at least some period because you lost some people you didn't expect to lose. During that same period of time, you increased the amount that will end up in your reserves. And your performance measures, generally reflect a pretty thorough, competent job that you're doing, with the exception of maybe an additional week's time that it takes to close an investigation or resolution of final orders. It looks like it's taken a little bit of extra time, which is probably reflective of that you don't have as many people working, yet still it's within a pretty good range. So it looks like you're doing a good job, you're increasing your reserves, and you've got fewer staff. And at the same time all that's happening, you're increasing your fee, which to me has the appearance of a disconnect on why you would need more. And you don't need to address it now unless you want to at 10 minutes.
Actually, I would like exactly to touch on that, and that's a tee up to the wider discussion on performance measures. So if you would respond to Representative Avakian.
Sure, Senator Johnson and Representative Avakian. The increase in balance is a result of greater than expected new contractors. We estimated, based upon previous 24 months experience, that we would average about 350 new contractors per month. That was a conservative estimate. We're getting closer to 400. That drives additional revenues. At the same time, we took a look at what rate do people renew. 100% of the contractors don't renew. We know that. They go out of business for whatever reason. And in years past, it was approximately 75%. That's what the statistics showed. Today, it's closer to high 80. 83. 80, well, okay, recently it's high. But when you take a look at the entire biennium, 83%. So you couple the increased amount of new contractors and the greater renewal rate, that drives up revenues greater than we expected. What that would justify, perhaps, is a reduction in the license fee. Because we raised the fees just a few months ago in July. And we look at them every year. The statute requires us to look at them every year. And depending on what you authorize spending, obviously we don't have a need, or nor would you want to have a too high of a reserve, and therefore we could reduce the amount of money that we have in the bank.
Is that responsive, Representative Avak?
It's responsive, but it's not conclusory, because you're not asking us to do that. You're asking us, what I would hear is, although it's a bit of a gamble because you may not keep having this many contractors entering, so I can see you're trying to hedge your bet a little bit, but you're asking us to allow you to increase your spending and increase a commensurate raise in the fee to compensate for that at the same time you've had this kind of growth and success in the past year. And so I guess we need to tie that up with why you come to the conclusion that you need that at this point.
Chair Johnson, Representative Avakian, we have statutory authority to have a fee at $295. That's what you authorized last session. I'm asking you to maintain that. I'm asking you to allow us to prove that we don't abuse that. If we could lower fees, we'll do so. As you heard, the testimony of the contractors is, we don't really care about an extra $5 or $10 less in fees. What we care about is, do you answer the phone? And frankly, we have experience over the last 15 years where we didn't answer the phone, and we didn't process the paperwork in a timely manner. The fee of $295 is a drop in the bucket of what it costs these folks to work. It's $150 a year. What they really need is for government to be responsive when they call, process their paperwork, and when they have a dispute with a consumer, for goodness sakes, get on it quickly.
All right, I think that's a good place to leave it for today. Tomorrow we will get into performance measures specifically. I'm going to ask the committee to be prepared to discuss performance measures with respect to the additional position and the claims workload issues. And so absent any comments from the committee or any additional questions, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Council. Sorry to come in at the end there. Borrowing from Senator Morse's bipolarness of last week, I feel good with where this board is going. They've agreed to work with small business partners, and it sounds like they've got the support of the industry. I'd love to have a consumer group come forward and you can get the same accolades. But I've gone through, and I'm prepared to go wherever you choose to go with manager.
All right. Well, with that concluding comment, we thank Mr. Fairchild again for your courtesy in joining us today, and we'll link up the budget and performance measures and be able to definitively comment on whether or not we think the performance measures are measuring the right stuff and pass that forward as part of this ongoing new ways and means process. So absent any additional comments, I'm going to close the public hearing.